Good morning. I'd like to call the House Legacy Finance Committee to order. Welcome, everyone. I'd like my clerk, Mr. O'Neill, would you please take the roll?
Of course, Mr. Chair. Representative Lilly.
Lilly present.
Representative Lilly present. Representative Jordan. Representative Green.
Present.
Representative Green present. Representative Acomb.
Present.
Representative Acomb present. Representative Anderson.
Anderson present.
Representative Anderson present. Representative Bo.
Bo present.
Representative Bo present. Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Christensen present. Representative Hassan. Representative Murphy.
Murphy present.
Representative Murphy present. Representative Nelson.
Nelson present.
Representative Nelson present. Representative Erdahl.
Erdahl present.
Representative Erdahl present. Representative Wasilewicz.
Wasilewicz present.
Representative Wasilewicz present. Representative Zhang.
Zhang present.
Representative Zhang present. Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. O'Neill. We have a quorum, so we're open for business. Representative Acomb, would you be willing to move our minutes from the March 9th meeting?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I move approval of the March 9th minutes.
Thank you. We have a motion by Representative Acomb. Any questions in regards to these March 9th minutes? See any hands? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The minutes have been approved. Thank you, Representative Acomb. Well, good morning. The first bill that we have on the agenda today is House File 3726. We're excited to have a representative Eklund here today before the Legacy Committee and present the Lessard Sams portion of our bill. And I'd like to move that House File 3726 be laid over for possible inclusion. So that's my motion. And before we kick off, I'm really excited to have this discussion today. We've kind of begun last week, and we're going to continue with it today with the bill before us. And I know it's a product of hard work that's been done by the Lessard Sams Council, and Representative Eklund is carrying the bill today. And just want to, before we get going, I want to thank him for doing that. And I understand there's a author's amendment. So I think we'll start with the author's amendment, if that's okay, and get it in the shape that the author would like. Or do you want to wait, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If we do the author's amendment, I can explain it quickly. All it is a result of the February forecast numbers. So there was a slight increases for each of the for the projects, and they're all listed in the amendment. So it's basically a technical change to reflect the.
So I think I'd like to move the A4 and get the bill in the shape that that we all can work with for the rest of the day here. I see a hand, so maybe that's not going to work. Lead Green, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I'm not saying you can't move what you want to move, Mr. Chair. I just, the question that I have is this then, as I understand it, you've just taken into account the increased funds that are projected to be there, and you've just increased every project by a certain percentage?
Lead Green, that is my understanding. We have Mr. Johnson, Director Johnson, and he's on here, and they can get in deeper detail. But yes, and they're going to get into that with the bill. And that I know that they vetted all these projects, and that they're They saw the forecast came in, and they're trying to add to the projects because most or all did not get their full, well, you know, all didn't get the full funding. So they're adding to it. And then they're also, which I think is important for all of us, keeping, respecting the reserves. So, Lee Green.
Yeah, I guess I kind of have a little bit of problem with that because, you know, I've been going through this stuff for a number of weeks now, trying to pencil out what's there and what's not. And now this is just going to kind of throw everything off. And we don't really know where a lot of this money is going as it is, as we'll get into when we get into the bill. And I think I don't see this going through the Senate anyway. So it might be a little bit premature to do this, but it's the author's amendment. If he wants to do it, I guess that's up to him.
Well, I guess we can hold off and we can add that later in the discussion. So I think that's what we're going to do. Representative Eklund, sorry I took us off to a little curveball there, but I'm super excited to hear from you today. And please tell us about your bill. Go ahead, sir.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for having me at your committee today. I'm looking forward to this as well. I'll be a little bit rusty because I did not see the projects as they came through. I was on LCCMR at the time, so I probably know the LCCMR bill better than I know this bill. But that we'll learn it. We'll learn as we go, Mr. Chair. So, House File 3726 is the Sarge Sands Outdoor Heritage Council request, and Mr. Chair, Minnesota was once covered in more than 19 million acres of prairie and 31 million acres of forest. But today, the DNR, according to the DNR, just 2% of Minnesota's original prairie remains. Our forest has shrunk to fewer than 18 million acres, and we've filled in all but about 10% of our wetlands. Faced with the prospect of losing what we have left, Minnesotans voted to increase our sales tax in 2008 because we recognize the importance of protecting these vital resources for our children and grandchildren. We as legislators have a duty to make sure that the money is spent wisely and that the projects supported with the funds have real measurable outcomes. According to a report commissioned in 2019 to mark the 10-year anniversary of the Legacy Amendment, the Outdoor Heritage Fund has financed restoration of 61,000 acres of wetlands, 600,000 acres of grasslands, and more than 40,000 acres of wildlife management areas. It has also helped protect nearly 356,000 acres of high-quality habitat on private lands through conservation easement and has funded hundreds of local projects through the popular Conservation Partners Legacy Grant Program. And these numbers grow each year through our continued investments. While we can easily calculate the impacted acres, the real benefits of this work are almost too vast to measure. We can think about our threatened pollinators, the bumblebees and monarchs needed to grow our food, finding a place to nest and feed in lush prairie flowers. We can think about thriving in a healthy forest, providing thousands of good paying jobs and sequestering millions of tons of carbon. We can think about taking our kids fishing along the banks of a restored trout stream. Without the Legacy Amendment, these treasured places and all that they give us would be lost forever. House File 3726 appropriates $159 million plus for 46 programs from the Outdoor Heritage Fund for the fiscal year 2023. Activities include native prairie protection, wetland restoration, trout stream enhancement, public wildlife enhancements, shallow lake enhancement, forest fragmentation prevention, and strategic land acquisition in feed and conservation easements. And now I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Johnson and Mr. Pavelko, who will go into more details about how the funding in this bill is being spent. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. Thank you for your introduction. And Director Johnson, good morning. Welcome, and get us going, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Nice to see you all this morning. I should mention, Mr. Chair, also that we do have the chair of the Lasard and Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council, David Hartwell, with us this morning. And David is he was traveling late last night, but thankfully was able to join us this morning. And at your interest, sir, do you wish him to say a few words now, or you wish us to go through the overview first?
Director Johnson, I think that actually might be a good place to start to hear from Mr. Hartwell. I, I know he's served on the board since the beginning and has done that very successfully and been a great steward of the money. I happen to be lucky enough to serve with him, and I know he's a solid leader. And Mr. Harwell, good morning. If you have a few words to kick us off and can kind of tell us about the, you know, how this comes together and the citizens and us troubled legislators that join you to come to a decision. I think it was unanimous this year. So, Mr. Harwell, good morning.
Good morning, Chair Lilly and committee members. I appreciate you giving me a little time. We're delighted to have you considering the bill. The Lessard Council is made up of 12 members, 8 citizens, and 4 legislators. As was mentioned, the bill in front of you was recommended unanimously by the 12 members after hearing from all of the grant proposers and going through a rather exhausting process of determining what made sense, what didn't make sense, how to make sure we were looking at projects all over the state and both restoration and protection as well as enhancement. So we're just delighted to have you consider it, appreciate it greatly, and I will turn it over to Mark, who can give you the details, but I'll be here if you have any questions for me.
Thank you, Mr. Harwell, and thank you for your service. I've always been impressed with the mixture of citizens and the legislators and coming up with a good bill for the state of Minnesota. And you seem to shotgun it all over the state, spread it out, and then you're very thoughtful. I think you're co-chair, are you, with Ron Shera? Is that?
Ron is the vice chair. I'm the chair.
Okay. So, and then his dog Raven's with you, I suppose.
No, we don't see Raven in our meetings.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Harwell. Director Johnson, please continue. I think it was good
Mr.
to hear
Chair, members.
Chair Harwell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The staff, Lessard Sam staff, provided you with 2 different handouts. One is a brochure that has several pages to it, or it's a 4-page fold-out brochure with a lot of great, and I know it's blurry on here, but you all at least get a chance to see what I'm talking about, and you have that in your packets. And then secondly was another one, which is more like this, and it's a spreadsheet with a bunch of columns on it. And that we can get to later. That actually is a spreadsheet of those, of the recommendations that are in the amendment. But for now, what I'll do, Mr. Chair, is I'll start you through by talking about the front page, the bill as a whole, the front and the back page of this brochure, and then we'll hand it to Mr. Pavelko to go through the inside, which is an extremely detailed area. As you heard the author, Representative Eklund, mentioned, there are a ton of different things in this bill, and this is the 14th, I believe, appropriation for the Lessard Sam's Outdoor, or for the Outdoor Heritage Fund. It's the 14th set of recommendations from the council. As you have heard, but it bears repeating, each year the council's job is to make recommendations on funding to the legislature and funding from the Outdoor Heritage Fund. And within that, we're supposed to maintain at least a 5% reserve within the recommendations, et cetera. To do that, there's about a 15-month process that happens where from start to finish, with the council starting and the legislature finishing, for these appropriations to come about and these recommendations come about. This last year, so it was 2021, April 1, the call for funding requests went out. And then it closed the end of May. The council then, starting in July, started looking at all of those proposals and not only thinking, they actually looked at every one of them. Each one of them gets a binder that's about 4 inches thick. And every one of those accomplishment plans is anywhere from 15 to 25 or 30 pages thick. So there's a lot of data in there. The council goes through those individually on a paper standpoint, and then the council discusses who are we going to have in, and who are, and then the council has in for hearings in the fall, virtually everybody every year. I say virtually because once in a while one drops out before that. And then project managers get a chance to actually defend their project, say why this is good, why it's not. The council does the hearing, has more questions, et cetera. And by December, it comes into a bill. It comes back into recommendations form for the council, and this bill is a result of that. Along the way, the council is scrutinizing heavily, discussing greatly amongst itself what are the good parts, what are the bad parts and of each one of these projects, and why they are not acceptable from a recommendation standpoint for the council to recommend funding. This year we had, I believe, was 51 requests for funding. 46 are in the project for recommendations, or 45, I'm sorry. Six were not funded, I believe it was, for one reason or another. Some of those were referred back to CPL where they are going. Some were just not ready for prime time and asked to kind of fine-tune some things and so on. At any rate, we have 46 of them here, and for a total of just over $155 million, I think it is. It's in your paperwork there. The most of these are repeat phases. We call them robust phases because they really are. They are doing good work. They're doing their paperwork correctly. They're doing the projects correctly. The council is confident that they are doing their work well, and the council has seen fit to provide another year of or another phase of funding for them. There are six new programs in this proposal, and some of those are metro, or right on the edge of the seven county metro, like the City of Rogers with their Big Woods Protection of Stieg Woods. The Bowser has a new one in there, which is kind of different because Bowser is always in there, but to see another new one is really interesting. And this is integrating habitat and clean water and stacking those benefits again. Washington County and Minnesota Land Trust have a new recommendation in there. The DNR has a fish passage enhancement through targeted culvert replacements. That's one of the new ones. Kind of interesting, and working with townships up in Lake County to make those culvert replacements possible. Broad Unlimited has has a new one again, which is enhancing Metro and North Shore trout streams with a bit of a twist, and they're looking at actually having a hiring program basically to hire BIPOC and underserved communities, especially in youth from the Metro, to kind of be that next generation of outdoor entrepreneurs, or be it workers, or at least give them a chance to put hands on. And then also we have the daylighting of Phelan Creek, which is just east of the Capitol, less than a mile, or maybe it is about a mile, a really interesting, unique, and I think a very brave projects to undertake. On the back page of on the front page of this brochure, or the summary, you will see that there are other benefits that are listed in outcomes or outputs that are happening. The acres that are going to be enhanced or protected or restored is over 80,000, 127 miles of shoreline. There's about $33 million of match from federal, state, or nonprofit or private funding, I should say. 29 different organizations, be they state, two state agencies, 9 local units of government, 18 NGOs are all involved as recipients of these funds. And then I should remind everybody that these funds, they don't just get the money and get to spend them. They actually, it's a reimbursement type basis where they actually have to spend their dollars, and then they provide the paperwork and get reimbursement. And DNR Grants Management are the ones that are doing the much of the oversight of that on a project and expense by expense basis. Even their timesheets, if they have personnel dollars, have to be provided to make sure the expenses are appropriate. On the back of this brochure, you'll see that there's a list of projects, and that is exactly as it is in the bill. The top subdivision two is the prairie section, then you go into forests and wetlands and habitats and administration. It's the same format, the same chronology as in the bill. So the very first one under subdivision two prairies is accelerating the wildlife management areas program with Pheasants Forever for $5.52 million. And that's how you will find them in the bill. As you can see, there's a lot of the money spreads out fairly well across these categories. Mr. Pavelko is going to provide more information about that as we get into the middle of the summary. I should mention also that none of these, let's back up. I think only one of these in this brochure in the original format of the bill has full funding, and that is the CPL program, this Conservation Partner Legacy Grant Program. That's the last one under habitats. I think it's the fourth line from the bottom. That's for $9.45 million. That is the small grants program that the council appropriates to each year. That's what they asked for this year. At least $2.5 million of that is earmarked strictly for the 7-county metro or communities of 50,000 or greater in population. So in other words, if they're in the city limits of Duluth, St. Cloud, or Rochester. And then beyond that, anybody in those areas can still, if once that $2.5 million is gone, they can still ask for the rest of the $7 million or whatever in CPL dollars. So they get a couple bites of that apple, which is why it was defined that way, why it was made that way, to give a little extra opportunity there. And boy, they get all kinds of applications. It's really wonderful. That's the small grants, only from going from 5,000 to 500,000, where the larger grants, the rest of them that go through the council, are from 500,000 or more. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. Pavelko to walk through the center of this document.
That's too funny. Thank you, Director Johnson. I'm glad that you mentioned towards the end the CPL. I think you started that, I think, when I might have been on there and with Mr. Hartwell, and it's just a great program, and the interest is robust. And I think that's a great place for people to start with programs. Mr. Pavelko, good morning. Go ahead and introduce yourself, and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Joe Pavelko, the Assistant Director with the Lessard SAM staff. If you look in the middle of your handout, the left side of the page, we've broken down all of the outputs by acres, and on the right side, we've broken down the outputs by funding. And then those are further broken down by the acres by activity, the acres by ecological section, and then resource type. And everything is also color-coded. So if you look at the top left pie chart, you'll see that the largest color there is the light blue, and the light blue are enhanced acres, and you can follow the enhanced acres down through those charts. So if you're interested in a certain type of activity like easement, you just look for the purple, and that will tell you what you need to know about enhance. Like Mark said before, there is a total of about 81,000 total acres that are going to be restored, protected, or enhanced. For restoration, what we consider, what the Lessard Council considers restoration, is taking something that does not have habitat and making it into habitat, or restoring it back into habitat. So that would be like an old field that doesn't have water on it, and restoring it back to a wetland with wetland vegetation and water and anything that makes it a wetland. Enhance would be taking habitat that's existing and making it better. Protect and fee with PILT, that is fee title acquisition that has a state PILT payment after it's acquired and transferred to the DNR. Protect and fee without PILT would be anything that's acquired in fee that does not go to the state. So that could be going to the federal government, specifically with the Lessard SAM stuff. its waterfowl production areas with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, could go to the counties, could go to cities, and also to NGOs. Protect an easement, just like it said, it's conservation easements. If you go down now into the ecological section, the Lasard Council, we break up the state into ecological sections. There's five ecological sections. If you look in the middle of the page there, that's kind of cut off in the very middle there, you can see the ecological sections. There's prairie that goes from the very southern part of the state all the way up to the northern part of the state, and northern forest to the northeast, et cetera. You'll see the splits between where the acres are apportioned for throughout the state there. And then again, if you look at the color coding, you can see the percent, you know, forest prairie zone, most of the acres that are being worked on there are enhanced acres. And then in addition, if you look down to the very bottom of the page, it says resource type and acres. So this wetlands aren't necessarily only restored in the prairie or in the southeast or the southeast forest. They could be all over the state. So this just gives you a breakdown of how many wetlands throughout the state there will be. But obviously, if you're looking at prairies, they're going to be in the prairie or prairie transition zone. But wetlands, they can be restored all over the state. So this just gives you a better idea of the total type of resources that are going to be restored. On the right side, we have funding, and you'll see that there is a difference between the acres, the percent of acres, and the percent of funding. And you can see, like, easements, we'll just pick on purple. Easements have 23% of the total acres, but they cost 33% of the total funding. You can mock that down. Throughout that page, you'll see that metro urban, we try to find outliers, just different things that happen after the appropriations. And this year, metro urban has the highest amount of funding that it's ever had, and that's 18%. And because the bill number is so large, it also has the highest amount of funding for it. And I won't go into any more detail on any of these breakdowns, but if there are members that want further breakdowns of anything, we have an online database system that can produce basically any information that a member would want. So we're open for any questions, and if any members have clarifications that they need or want, we're here to provide that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Pavelko. Director Johnson, I saw your hand up. Go ahead. I at the end of your comments, or at least include them, I'd like to have your comments about what the goal of the A4, the author's amendment, was. So please incorporate that into your whatever your hand up was or hand up was for.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll do that. Mr. Chair, one last thing, which we often forget to mention, but in the center of the document, on the sort of be the center fold out, the lower right corner, you'll see there's a total underneath that has $145,288,000. That's different than the bill number. The bill number, the bill total is $155,000. There are four lines that are not included in this center part. That's the administrative. They're the four bottom lines on the back of the brochure. So it's the contracts management, the technical evaluation panel, and the independent initial development plan coordinators, that IDP, and also the CPL, the Conservation Partner Legacy. So that totals up to be a little over $10 million, and that's the difference. The reason those are not in there is, number one, the administrative part isn't going to produce acres, so we don't put that in there naturally. The CPL, we don't know where those acres are, what they are going to be yet, because it's a small grants program and it operates separately. So rather than projecting and try to guess, we purposefully keep those out. And then we have a report from CPL that comes out each year on what has happened, what they've been doing with the dollars. So I just wanted to make that comment. Mr. Chair, the other handout that came from Lasard Stamps, the one that on the top, it says, here we go. At the top, it says it's the February 2022 forecast, additional $3.688 million allocation, 6% reserve. That is, those figures are the figures that are in the author's amendment, changing these dollar figures on the bill with right down the line. If you, just to give you a little background, because I think it's extremely important here, the legislature's always said, well, what does the council think about this? Because we want to make sure all this is vetted through the council. That's their job. Back at the December meeting of the council then at that time was taking into consideration the December forecast, which was increased. And the council at that point came up with these the recommendations that are in the current language of the bill. At that time, they also said, we may have an increase or a decrease in February. And the legislature each year has been, or the last couple of years has been saying, we kind of like to know ahead what we should do. So this time the council made a motion that if there was an increase or a decrease in funds for the February forecast, that increase or decrease would be proportionally attributed within the proposals, with no proposal to receive more than what it had asked for, and no increase to administration. So staff followed that direction of the council, took the new figures, placed them into this document, which you see in that yellow column on the right, that's the final March 3rd recommendations. We provided that back to the council for review, and then it went to, so the council members knew exactly what their motion had accomplished. And then we provided that to the author and to leadership. So it has been vetted by the council. This is the direction, or it's a recommendation, the new recommendation of the council. And you can verify that with Chair Hartwell, as, if you wish, sir.
Okay. I see a hand up from Mr. Pavelko. Go ahead. And then I'd like to recognize Chair Hartwell.
Mr. Chair and members, just I believe there was a question earlier in the hearing about how the numbers came about. So the what we did was we calculated the total amount minus all of the programs that had full funding, so basically everything except for CPL and administration. And then we'll just pick on the very first project. So that was the accelerating the wildlife management area program with Pheasants Forever. They received 3.79% of the total appropriation minus the CPL and the administration. And then so they received 3.79% of the total new funds. And those were, that's how each project was given their extra funds. So it wasn't equal, it was based on the proportion that they received before. So some projects will have more and some will have less.
Thank you, Mr. Pavelko. Chair Hartwell, go ahead, sir.
I don't have a lot to add other than the reason we came to this was the council not meeting during the legislative session, but the chair and vice chair being asked for their opinion as to how to spend the extra money, and a deep uncomfortableness of speaking for the council without the council being there. In the past, the council has accepted what we've done and been okay with it, but it made us very uncomfortable. And so we asked the entire council to provide a recommendation, so we weren't alone in creating that recommendation. And this is what they came up with, which was, again, unanimously approved by the council.
Thank you, Chair Hartwell. And I just want to offer a comment, and I'm going to move the A4. But, you know, recently there was a good article in Outdoor News, and it kind of mentioned some of what I think Mr. Pavelko mentioned, that some groups, it's a little like you have two bonding chairs, your former bonding chairs on here. It's the same thing. You have a high request, and a lot of groups got different amounts based, you know, off of their asks. And then so this, they receive so much money, but then this is adding to the amount they got. And I think I might ask my committee administrator to send that article out to members, because it was interesting to see that some groups got, you know, different amounts, you know, and it just very much reminded me, having served on bonding too, just, you know, how, you know, people got different amounts. So with that, I'd like to move the A4 amendment to get the bill in the shape that Chair Eklund wants it to be in. Any questions regards to the A4 amendment at this time? Representative Green, Lead Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I understand what they're doing. As we get into the bill and go through some of the projects, you'll understand why I say this, but I'm just not comfortable right now increasing the number. So I will be a no on the amendment, although I'm quite sure it'll go on. But that's the reason. And when we get into questions here, you'll see why, you know, looking through the bill, there's a lot of projects in here that really, even though the claims are that they've been vetted, there's not really even plans for some of them that are marked off into the big book. So I'll be a no on the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Lee Green. I'm hoping that we can pass this amendment and get it in the shape that the author would like. Any questions beyond Lee Green? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A4 amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed?
No.
So the amendment is approved, and so we have the bill, Chair Eklund, in the shape that you want it. I'm hoping that we can continue discussion. Chair Eklund, I just want to mention too, maybe before we get going, that you kind of covered that in your introduction, but Chair Becker Finn was actually serving on the council at the time, and she's available as a resource, and I want to thank her for service on the council, and then working on these proposals, having served on it. I know that there's quite a bit of research that does go into these projects, and I want to thank Chair Becker Finn for hers, and she's helping Representative or Chair Eklund to carry this, and on the Environment Committee, I heard her say that she would be there as a resource. So, Chair Eklund, any comments before we get into your discussion here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think we're ready for questions. I will comment that Chair Becker Finn and I have already been collaborating on this, and when we get this bill to the House floor, she will be presenting it as a part of it, as well as me doing it, because it's she's the one that sat through all the projects, so she knows what's going on here. So I appreciate her help, and she's going to be a great resource. But I think we're ready for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. So I think it's a good time to get into discussion. I know, Representative Green, you have some amendments. I don't know how you'd like to proceed, but go ahead, Green, sorry.
Well, Mr. Chair, you are the chair, so you can tell us how we're supposed to proceed. If you want to move the amendments first before the discussion or after, that's completely up to you.
Well, I was going to try to actually help you stage your attack, but I figured you'd have some comments first, and then maybe you'd.
Yeah. First of all, it's not an attack. There, I do have legitimate questions. I'm not here.
Yes, sir.
And I hope you take the questions like that. There's just things that I like answered inside the bill. And there's a series of questions, and I don't intend to use up the next hour to do that. So we'll try to move through them quickly. But I will be jumping around in the bill just because I've moved my questions around so that if there are questions concerning projects from Bowser or DNR, they'll be all together instead of, or the projects, I should say, should be all together instead of bouncing back and forth from one to the other. That makes sense?
Yes, so, Lee Green, thank you. And I know that Director Johnson, I've just always been impressed that, they're, him and his team have been available for questions, and hopefully you've been able to reach out to him and get some of them answered, and maybe you're not happy with it or whatever, but I know that from my experience that he's very much, and the whole team is very much interested in, you know, giving answers and being resources to people with these funds. Lee Green, go ahead.
Well, I'll echo that, and I don't usually do that, but Director Johnson has always been more than helpful, so thank you for that. But starting on page, this is just a simple question because I don't see it in the project detailed, but on page 18 of the bill, starting at line 25, it talks about two dams that are going to be modified for fish passage. And I see that the one that I don't have it here now, the Rock something dam, that's in there, but it doesn't tell me what the Phelps dam is. And so, but it doesn't really say what they're going to do. Are they going to remove the dams? Because it looks like they're going to remove them, but then it also talks about modification. Can you explain that project to me and the value of it? And that would be for either the author or maybe Mr. Johnson or the other testifier as well.
Thank you, Lee Green. I think I'm going to go to, if that's all right, Chair Eklund, I think I'm going to go to Mr. Johnson at this time and just Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm going to, while I'm giving a little bit of the answer, I think Mr. Pavelko maybe has, hopefully he has his accomplishment plans in front of him so we can look up that one. Otherwise, I can go get mine there in the other room.
Mr. Pavelko. I think he ran away.
I do that to people sometimes.
Oh, here he is. Mr. Pavelko, sorry.
Mr. Chair and members, if Representative Green could tell me what the name of the actual...
Lee Green, just kind of ask your question.
Yeah, it's in the project, it is HRE02, phase 5.
Mr. Pavelko.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll have to read through it here shortly just to figure out exactly... what's going on here.
Lee Green, do you have another question? And then they can kind of...
I do. Well, they're looking that up. The next question is the next project. It's HRE03. Now, I'm a little bit familiar with this one, but I do have some questions on it. This one, I think it's a watershed project from Kitson County. It's claiming to store 16,000 plus feet of water. And I'm wondering what that'll mean for the landscape. And I'll just ask the questions so that I don't have to keep pounding on it. I'd like the project explained a little bit. And also, it seems like there's some consternation with some of the landowners. And I'm wondering how you're dealing with that on that project.
Director Johnson?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think for everybody else's sake, I believe... Mr. Representative Green is referring to the Klondike Clean Water Retention Program, Phase 2. It starts on 1833 of the bill. And that's in the Two Rivers Watershed District, which is up in the Kitson and Roseau counties. I'll just go by memory off this, but the basically it's Phase 2 of the project. Phase 1 was funded last year. They're starting to work on that. What they're doing is they're taking, I believe there's any problem with landowners in this area. It's a joint effort of the watershed and the joint benefits for habitat. Of course, if you're going to use outdoor heritage funds, you have to have a habitat benefit from it. And there's aquatic as well as upland habitat. But also, there's another component to it, which are using clean water funds for and other funds for water quality and for water control. It's upstream from Lake Bronson and upstream from the Lake Bronson Dam. Basically what they're doing is part of the stream where the OHF dollars are being used is they're putting a remeander back in. They're also having, through clean water funds or other funds, there's also a portion of this program that it's providing a water impoundment area. And that's will be on public land, as I understand. They're working with DNR on a land trade with a landowner. There's a portion of property adjacent to this that they want to acquire. The landowner says, I'm fine with selling it, but I want to trade it for another parcel DNR has, so that's going through the process as well. It's a water control project that's going to help with flooding aspect, That's a side effect. Where the OHF dollars are being used, it's going to be in that project used for upland habitat as well as for aquatic habitat, such as the remeander of the stream. So it slows the water, provides more fish spawning area, better migration, et cetera.
Lead Green.
Thank you. Thank you for that answer. So then just one more question on that one, because some of the things that I've been hearing from that area might not coincide. Is there been any talk or any threat of using eminent domain in that area at all?
Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, to my understanding, no, there has not been any intent nor mention of eminent domain for that project.
Okay.
Lead Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Let's go right down the list and we'll go to HRE 04. And this is a really simple question. And, you know, in a lot of these projects, it talks about wanting to include the BIPOC communities. And in most cases, they really don't say too much about that. But in this one, it does mention that this one will have definite value for the members of the White Earth Nation. But it doesn't really say what they are. It's kind of vague. Do you know what benefits is going to be from this project?
Lee
That's
Green.
HRE 04, Buffalo River Watershed.
Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, to my information that the tribe is, the White Earth Band is not directly involved with this, but the benefits to them are going to be, first of all, clean water, and I believe there's clean water funds being used in adjacent to this as well, but also for migration of sturgeon, the ability, those spawning beds and everything from a sturgeon, as well as, of course, walleye moving upstream and so on. So it'll be fishable and clean water type benefits.
Okay. Lee Green, are you a member of?
Yes, I am.
That's what I thought. So, Lee Green.
So the point that I have there is not really anything. I just wanted to know what it was. I don't like being, you know, like the generic stuff that says this is going to be beneficial because it's beneficial to everybody. If this language is in here, then I'd like to know what those benefits are if they're claiming those benefits. The last one in the watershed type one is HA09. And this is probably a pretty simple question. On page of the book, if you have it in front of you, on pages 4 and 5, this looks like this project is going to be purchased through Clean River Partners. And generally, what you do when you do that is even though I'm not really understanding why, they'll purchase the property, then they'll use the state money to enhance the project, and then they'll turn it back over to the state. This one looks like they're purchasing it, and then unless I'm reading it wrong, they're immediately going to turn it back over to the state before they enhance it. And really, if you look at it, it doesn't say any plan. It just says there's really no specific plan. After they get the money, then they'll develop a plan. And that really doesn't seem to be, it doesn't seem to coincide with, you know, what I hear when you say these are all vetted. This doesn't look like it's vetted at all.
Director Johnson, and then maybe we should go back to Mr. Pavelko. Maybe he's got the answer for that first question.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Pavelko may have more to add than I do on this one as well, but Representative Green, was that actually the Cannon River Watershed that you're talking about on 14.33 of the bill?
Yes, it is, but I think they renamed it to the whatever it was, the Water Partners, whatever it was.
Yeah, that. Yeah. There are two things that happen with land. Sometimes it's acquired, and this is one of those cases, or the second case, I believe, or they have both. Sometimes it's acquired and then it's brought up to standards, it's enhanced or restored by the acquiring entity. So it could be Trust for Public Land or some other such. And I think Trust for Public Land is one of the recipients in this. Yes, it is. Otherwise, or often they use Great River Greening to do those enhancements for them. At other times, the DNR says, well, we'd love you to buy this property. We'd love it. We'll accept the property as part of a WMA or AMA. But we want our people to do the the restoration enhancement work. So there's a letter of funds of a letter of funds use that is then provided by the recipient to the DNR, so the DNR can utilize those funds to do the enhancements on that property. It's still a joint type effort, but the DNR will lead in that restoration enhancement for some specific reason the DNR has. Maybe it's because they have a specific contractor that's already working on adjacent property or something, some other such thing. And Mr. Pavelko may have more information on that as well.
Thank you, Director Johnson. Mr. Pavelko.
Mr. Chair and members, also part of the process with the acquisition is making sure that the land that's acquired is restored and providing the habitat. The whole point of the acquisition is to provide the habitat. So if the property doesn't provide additional habitat, then the, you know, the acquisition doesn't meet the requirements of OHF. So when we think of acquisition, it's acquisition and the restoration of the properties or enhancement if there's existing habitat there. Going back to Representative Green's questions on the dams, we do have some information that we received from DNR on those dams, and there's a description here of each of those, and I don't know if it would be best if we just forward those to members, but the Phelps Dam in Otter Tail County, it's a site with historical significance, and so they're working through the process with the county. They have two conceptual designs, and they're trying to provide fish passage. And then the same with the Rock Dam and also Seven Mile Creek Dam. But there's information here, and we can forward that on to the members, if Mr. Chair, if you would like.
Thank you, Mr. Pavelko. I've seen some amazing restructuring of some of these dams into you know, very, very great habitat. So thank you. Representative Green, Lead Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Going back to, thank you for that, Mr. Pavelko. But going back to previous then with the turning the land back over to some other entity, we go back into the question, and some of these questions for you, I know, are repetitive because this is the second committee that you've been in, and I don't know that I really got adequate answers last time, but this happens all the time, and the question is, I don't even expect you to answer this, but the question to everybody is, why do we run these projects through NGOs when they're simply going to turn the land back over to the state anyway? Wouldn't you be better off eliminating paperwork and just hiring somebody to do the work? I mean, if that or using the volunteers. So that's always an issue with me. But we'll move on here. Actually, believe it or not, I don't really have that many left. But if we go back,
we gave you time.
I appreciate it.
I promised you that,
and I appreciate it very much. Going right back to the beginning, back to Bowser and the Pheasants Forever stuff. On page 2.19 of the bill, and it's project PA02, I asked this question in an environmental committee too. You've got a specific amount of acres. It's 880 acres, but you don't say where it's at. You've got, you arrive at a cost down to the penny basically, but you still don't know where the acres are and how much you're going to have to pay for them. And you figure into your project for new roads and trails. How do you do that if you don't even know where the land is that you're going to buy?
Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green. First of all, on the roads and trails, this is the Rim Grasslands Reserve project. It is,
Director Johnson, when you turn your head, your voice does something funky there.
I'm sorry. I should have headphones, but they're at the office, at the other office. So this is the Rim Grasslands Reserve Phase 4 with Bowser. With regards to the trails on those, of course, these are private lands that are having easements, rim easements put on them. So any trails are that are going to be on those are at the owner's expense. They are used for maintenance, basically, or for current use that they currently have for egress and access through that property. So there's no cost involved in that, to my understanding. RIM is a sign-up type program, so they don't know who's going to take them up on their offer. They know how much they're going to be able to provide. Generally, they've been doing it long enough. They have the figures down, how much it's going to cost them from a personnel time, as well as the cost of the easements, as well as what the general enhancement or restoration is going to be on that property, which they do provide that enhancement of the property afterwards from a habitat standpoint. So I hope that answers your question. If not, we can dig into it deeper.
Lead Green.
Mr. Pavelko may have more too.
Well, let's just keep going. On page four, starting at line 1.8, it's in the book, it's PA06. And you're asking for $4.2 million, basically almost 4.3. But you're leveraging that with $3.78 million from clean water funds. And so you're taking the legacy outdoor heritage funds and you're using the leverage from the legacy clean water funds. And so you're leveraging state dollars with state dollars. And that always kind of bothered me too. But was there any private funds that are going to be in this? Anything coming from anywhere else? And is it common practice to use state dollars to leverage state dollars?
Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair, and I don't believe we really consider it as leverage, but the funds are being spent. Bowser has received funding for this from Clean Water as well. It hasn't been a conscious collaborative of the two councils working together, because generally the two councils are aware of what the other is doing, but they're looking at it from their own side. So the Clean Water Fund is looking at this from what's it going to do for clean water, and then Outdoor Heritage is looking at what's it going to do for Outdoor Heritage. And the it allows for an expansion of the buffer, so you have an accentuated benefit for both habitat as well as clean water. As you get a wider buffer, that naturally happens. And, of course, this is all with willing landowners. You had another question that I didn't get to. I'm sorry. Maybe you could repeat that, Chair. Lead Green.
Thank you, Director Johnson. And Lead Green, I just want to throw out there that I think that's one of the strengths of some of the things that are going on. And, Chair Murphy has mentioned some of that is, working funds together. I just think is really one of the things that's happened in the last couple of years that's really improving. I think we want some of these funds working together to build a better habitat or to build a better, restoring more wetland or, trying to partner together and then figuring out where it fits better, whether it's a Lassard project, for maybe a little more hunting focused or fishing and then maybe, the clean water aspects. But, I think it's one of the strengths that, and then we actually want, at least in my mind as chair, I want other funds. A place where someone could have a park bench to look at birds or a piece of artwork maybe in one of these wetlands or something. So anyways, I think there's some benefit to working together. Sorry to throw my two cents in there, Chair, or Lead Green.
You are the chair. You can throw as many cents as you want, I guess. But but the question, when we talk about funds being leveraged, the idea behind that is so that there's input from local or other areas. And so the question was, do you often use one state dollar, where no matter where it comes from, for leveraging for other state dollars? Because it doesn't really seem it seems a little bit, I don't want to use the word shady, but a little deceptive to say more support for this because we've got more state dollars from another state entity. In this case, it's all legacy. But so does it, do you use that quite often? Good question.
Director Johnson.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Lee Green, for reminding me of that, the leverage portion. Bowser is a state program regarding the RIM buffers. There's no private leverage coming from that. There's no nonprofits taking in money of it. There has been traditionally the there has been through this whole a number of years here federal leverage that comes in and on that one. That's one thing I know the council took into consideration as they're going through the RIM. There's leverage from the RIM fund. There may be federal leverage as well. But, Mr. Chair, this might be another one because it's a longer phase. It's phase 10. And Bowser's been doing this work and working with our farmers to help them take some of this marginal cropland and put it into buffers and then provide some money for them through easement to, as well as enhancement to make that happen. It's one that I think the council had a lot of discussion on. I know they did early on, and they seem to have more discussion each year also on it to find out really is it doing what they want and everything else, and to a positive benefit that report's been coming back. But it may be a good one for Chair Hartwell to just provide his thoughts on as well as a member of the council.
Thank you, Director Johnson. I love that program that working with willing farmers and then just seems like a huge success when you really dig in on some of those. Chair Hartwell, welcome back.
Thanks, Chair Lilly and members. Appreciate the question, Representative Green. I, like you, am very interested in the leverage portion of any proposal that comes in. And we do discuss it, we identify it, we ask the proposers to identify where they will get leverage. We do find, certainly with someone like Bowser, a reluctance to claim they're going to get federal matches before the federal government has actually put a stamp of approval on a request. And so sometimes we're caught in this in-between where they, in the past, have received leverage, they anticipate getting leverage, but they can't claim leverage on the proposal. And I believe this is one of them. Perhaps Mark or Joe will correct me on that. But in terms of using legacy dollars to leverage legacy dollars, we really don't see much of that and frankly would discount it somewhat in our internal calculations of the value of the leverage. It is nice to see that there are other state funds coming in to make a project bigger than what it would be with just the funds being recommended through the Lessard Council. But I don't think we provide a lot of this is a fabulous project because they're bringing leverage of more legacy dollars to the picture.
Lead Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see that Mr. Pavelko has his hand up. He may want to comment on that as well.
Mr. Pavelko, go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, the project that we're talking about, the goal of the project is to widen the buffer. So with wildlife, bigger is usually always better. And so if you put a small, thin buffer along a stream, it might be good for water quality, but it's probably not the best for wildlife. So the bigger or the wider or the more habitat you can put out there, the better. So that's what they're trying to do is take two funds, one where the requirements for clean water, you have those requirements, but then we can use OHF money to expand that to make it even better for water quality and wildlife. And so that's the gist of it. And they've been doing that for 10 years now, and it seems to be working pretty well.
Thank you, Bert. Mr. Pavelko, it seems like, and that was kind of my point, is I think they're trying to partner together to work, to be thoughtful about projects and to make them more successful. And one of the things I've always liked is, I remember Representative Hansen kind of told me about RIM. I didn't know anything about RIM, and then the match was just incredible. So this was years and years ago, and I've been hooked on it ever since. I just think it's a great, great program with the match. Lee Green. Sorry.
Thank you. I'm not going to ask any more questions on these, but I will note that WA03, WA05, and HA03 are all in the same category where they are asking for considerable funds for easements, but they don't have anything listed. I've heard the explanations. I think
Lee, that's Lee Green, you cut out a little bit there. Just go ahead again, please.
Okay. I just said that there's other projects in here that also have a considerable amount of acres in easements, and they still don't know where they're going to buy them. I don't know that I can completely accept the fact that this is what they pay on average, so they're just going to look for more funds and so give us money. I do want to point out that last one that we spoke about was for expanding buffers. And the willing landowner stuff, I will tell you from experience talking to the people that I have, especially over in the area, the Red River Valley, that they're not so much willing is that their back's against the wall. It's either enroll in a program or you lose the land anyway. And I also want to say for the record that there is a very, I consider to be very reliable study coming out, or that came out of Canada, that says the buffer strips in the plains area could in some cases do more damage than they're doing good as far as water quality, because that vegetation as it rots will produce phosphorus and also nitrogen, but mostly phosphorus. And when the ground is frozen in the spring and there's runoff, it all goes into the lake. And I'd really like for people to maybe pay some more attention to that in those areas.
Lee Green, maybe that's a good time to bring up your A2 amendment.
That sounds good.
So Lee Green moves the A2 amendment, and so please tell us about it. And go ahead, sir.
Okay,
because that's related to that project, I think, up there.
Okay, within the legacy amendment, there is language and. It's that states that money appropriated from the Outdoor Heritage Fund shall not be spent to acquire property by eminent domain. And then it does state in there, unless the owner requests the property required by eminent domain. What is happening in the area where we're talking about now, first of all, I will state that a lot of landowners have told me that they are, even if eminent domain is not being imposed, they're threatened with it. Many times. And in the case now, there's a resolution been passed to use eminent domain by a watershed that will be using legacy funds. And the project actually is more for habitat than it is water retention, which I don't know if that's really the goal that we should be having in our watershed district. But what they're doing is they're saying that we're not using the legacy funds for the eminent domain, we're using them someplace else within the project. I don't think that was the intention when this was passed, that eminent domain should not be used when it comes to these funds. I think it's a shell game, and it's pretty disturbing to me. So what the A2 amendment does, it just makes clear that if you're receiving funds from the legacy amendment, then eminent domain should not be used for those projects. That's the amendment.
Thank you, Lee Green. Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair.
Is Lassard Sams using eminent domain?
No, sir.
Can you use it?
No, we cannot. By law, we cannot.
That's
except, exception to that is if the willing landowner requests that eminent domain be used. And of course that generally doesn't happen unless the willing landowner says, hey, for my tax purposes, I want this because it'll help me with the feds, with the IRS. Mr. Chair, I spoke with Lassard Sam's staff the other day to ask if there was any knowledge that we had collectively with regards to eminent domain being used in an outdoor heritage project. None of us can remember anything. It doesn't mean there hasn't been, but I mean, Sandy's been there the whole time, basically since 2009, I think, and there was no knowledge of that. It doesn't mean that it hasn't, but collectively, we don't remember anything like that. Mr. Chair, I think there is more to this, the story, you're dealing with watersheds and others. Statute that allows watersheds to use eminent domain or taxing ability or whatever it might be, leverage. I can't get into all of that because it's just not our bailiwick. But it may be that I've heard there's more to the story of this watershed and their negotiations with the one landowner. It's beyond outdoor heritage. This is an issue, or that is an issue at least between the watershed and the landowner. So for further comment there, you may want to go to the watershed people. I'm not sure.
Thank you, Director Johnson. We received a letter, and I don't know if all members received it from the watershed or from, I can't find it right here and chair of the meeting at the same time. Sorry. Maybe I'm too old for that, but so have you seen that letter, Lead Green?
I have seen the letter, but I could comment on the letter, but
please do.
But first, what Director Johnson just said is that he agrees with me that the eminent domain is not allowed to be used if you're using legacy funds. The fact is that on the Goose Prairie Marsh project, they're trying to leverage I'm going to get this wrong, but it's right around $600,000 of legacy funding to move this project forward. This has been in place since 2017. They have not been able to come to an agreement, and there is a lot longer story to it. I don't know that it's relevant here, because what is relevant here is that in law, you can't use legacy money for eminent domain. And so right now what is happening is it looks like they've passed a resolution to implement eminent domain on the property owner, whether it's one or six. I don't know that it matters because the law says you can't. And their reasoning is that they're not going to use the legacy funds to purchase the eminent domain. They're going to use it on another part of the project after they get the eminent domain. And that's what I mean when I say it's a shell game. The law simply states you can't do it. And what my amendment is simply doing, and this is what it'll read, you can't use the money to acquire property by eminent domain on a project that uses eminent domain to acquire property. This paragraph does not apply when the owner of the property requests that the owner's property be acquired by eminent domain. So it's just a simple change in the wording that will clarify the fact that in law, these funds can't be used on these projects. And I don't really think it's, you know, I understand when people want to shift stuff around, but that's not really our job. We passed the law that says you can't use the funds for these. And if it's being skirted in some way or even being attempted to be, I think it's to everyone's benefit to clarify it now before it gets out of hand.
Thank you, Lee Green. I just can't help but make a comment. I feel like you're just kind of misreading. I just don't think it's eminent domain is not being used, nor has it been used by Lessard Sams, just to, you know, full stop. And then I think they're doing a dam in this project or something. But Director Johnson, do you have a quick comment? And then we'll get to a...
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just for the record, the funds that are in question in this, it is the it was a 2017 appropriation. It was to the Wild Rice Watershed District. There were $600,000 in the appropriation, and those funds are statutorily dedicated or used only to enhance aquatic and upland habitat within and adjacent to the Goose Prairie Marsh Wildlife Management Area. So these funds by law cannot be used for acquisition, and that's not what they're being used for. The funds are being used only for enhancement of whatever lands that are there, be they public lands or acquired new public lands, whatever it might be. So within the law, these funds are continuing to be used legally.
Lead Green, and I'm going to go to Chair Eklund for a comment as the author of the bill.
Then I'll just put it to this way. This is exactly what I was talking about. The If you put all your money in a fund and you just cut off a little bit of it because the law says you can't use it for something, you'll say, well, we'll just put this fund over here, even though it's part of a bigger project. It just doesn't seem right to do that. And that's what this is going to do. As far as the project goes, the truth be known on this project, it sits beside federal Fish and Wildlife property. There is an existing ditch within that property. The Fish and Wildlife will not allow that ditch to be cleaned or a culvert to be cleaned further down. So what this project would do is actually take another chunk of property that this person owns, cut a ditch through the middle of it that will then essentially have a 50-foot buffer on it. It will render much of the property that he has left absolutely useless, and some of it he won't even have access to because they won't refuse to clean out an existing ditch. That's the project, but that's still not the point. The point is that in the law, it was passed, eminent domain shouldn't be used, and we're skirting the law by allowing this to happen. And that's what the amendment is about.
Thank you, Lee Green. Chair Eklund, any comments, and then we'll go to a vote on the A2 amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I urge that this amendment not be adopted. I don't think it's the purview of this committee or commission to talk about what watershed districts or other legal municipal entities can do.
Mr. Chair, can I get a roll call?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Chair Eklund and Lee Green. Our roll call has been requested. Are you ready, Cork O'Neill? Go ahead, sir. Please call the roll.
Representative Lilly.
Lilly, no.
Representative Lilly, no. Representative Jordan.
No.
Representative Jordan, no. Representative Green.
Yes.
Representative Green, aye. Representative Acomb.
Acomb, no.
Representative Acomb, no. Representative Anderson.
Anderson, aye.
Representative Anderson, aye. Representative Bowe.
Bowe votes aye.
Representative Bowe, aye. Representative Christensen.
No.
Representative Christensen, no. Representative Hassan, excused. Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Murphy, no. Representative Nelson.
Nelson, aye.
Representative Nelson, aye. Representative Erdahl.
Erdahl, aye.
Representative Erdahl, aye. Representative Wasloick.
Wasloick, no.
Representative Wasloick, no. Representative Zhang.
Zhang, no.
Representative Zhang, no. Mr. Chair, the ayes are five, the nays are eight, and the motion does not prevail.
The A2 amendment did not prevail. Representative Green, I see you have another amendment, the A3 amendment. Would you like to move that?
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move the A3 amendment.
Okay, we have the A3 amendment before us. Go ahead, Lee Green.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, we see the funds coming through all the time. We hear about the wonderful projects, and some of them I'm sure are. But in many cases, there's never any cost-benefit analysis done. So we don't really know if we're getting the value for these money that we're spending now. We hear a lot of talk about how afterwards they'll come in and maybe or maybe not tell us about the project and what it's done. But we don't know what the benefit is of that project. And so what this does, it just puts into law that just like if you would, any project that you would go to a bank for or want any kind of funding for or even spend your own money on, you're going to want to know beforehand whether or not that project is going to yield you any benefit. So what this does is says that for these projects can go forward within the process of them doing their planning, they have to do a cost-benefit analysis. And I would like a roll call on that as well, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Lee Green has requested a roll call, and that'll be granted. So I don't know if Director Johnson, if you had a a comment that you'd like to make about this? I just want to put out there that I just really feel that, you know, of all the funds many things in the legislature, I would actually have the opposite interpretation. I just really feel like this group has been really thorough, and they vet the projects and they really look at them, and then they look at them again in the future. And it's, I actually have the complete, no big surprise here, Lead Greed, but I have the complete opposite opinion. I just think that they're amazingly thorough and checking up. And a couple of years ago, I remember a project where they made a mistake, and we all as a committee, Chair Hartwell at the time, I think, and we all decided, they're not going to get funds again. So there's really a harsh consequence. And I think that was up on the North Shore, a trout stream or something. But Director Johnson, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, I think cost benefit analysis is something that is very much inherent in the process currently used by the council. And of course, our Chair Hartwell could respond to that individually. But Mr. Chair, I think that that's something that has been mentioned before, but I don't think it's necessarily been understood. The council does not just look at the 15 to 25 page accomplishment plans, but they do then ask questions, and not just personally in the hearings that happen in the fall, but also before that, there are questions that are sent to the project managers examining each one of them and the attributes within them. Within each one of the project proposals or accomplishment plans that they put together, there are output tables that provide the cost per acre by resource type, the cost per acre by ecological section, the cost per acre when you're looking at whether it's prairie or it's forest or it's restoration or it's enhancement or it is acquisition or easement. So all of those figures are brought in, as well as the outputs that are anticipated from this, so that those costs and those outputs or those benefits can be examined. The council also takes into consideration what are the other benefits, the ancillary ones or the secondary ones, such as accessibility for people and huntability and what wildlife is going to benefit from this. Lastly, I'd like to say that part of the reason that you can't necessarily have a part of the reason the council has to look at these each individually is because they each one of the projects or proposals has its own challenges, its own unique set of circumstances behind it. And I'll give you three very interesting examples. They're all three very unique. One is the fish passage enhancement through targeted culvert replacement. That's one in this bill. It's up in northwestern Minnesota in Lake County, where DNR is working with the townships to replace those culverts that are cutting off the migratability in the streams for brook trout. To get to those cold water resources that they need to survive in those streams. It's a $800,000 appropriation, roughly. Another is the Big Woods Protection at Steig Woods, which is different. It's not an enhancement. It's an acquisition of a 26-acre parcel that is in urban area on the edge of the metro. And it's, again, a very different, it's old growth forest. It's something that is a $1 million appropriation plus more leverage coming in. And then lastly, there's daylighting of Phelan Creek, which is here in St. Paul. That's a $3 million plus project that's going to provide a quarter mile, basically 1,500 linear feet of daylighted stream that was restoring that daylighted stream. It's how can you compare those three with a cost analysis that puts apples to apples? It's very much apples to oranges to kiwi to grapefruit as the council looks at these projects. And that's why the individuality has to be reviewed by the council and why it is in the process that we have right now.
Lead Green, we're down to 5 minutes.
I know. I'll just make one comment and then I'll be done and we can vote.
Yes, sir.
I've heard now that they vet these projects extensively. They go through and they do the benefits from them extensively. But then I heard that they can't do this because it's just too hard. And I hear this all the time. And most of the time it comes from the DNR. It's just too hard to do this. I do think that if there's a benefit to this, it should be listed and be in a part of the plan because we're spending a lot of money and it's taxpayer money. But anyway, Mr. Chair, we can move forward.
Thank you, Lee Green. You know, I'm not going to be in favor of this at the time, but I'm not against the discussion because I think this one, you know, we have to continually make sure we're doing a good job with these funds. And I think they are, but, you know, I think having questions on it is, you know, I'm not offended by that. And it's hard to measure, you know, the value on some of these things. So that would be my, you know, argument. I mean, it's hard to see the, you know, do you count butterflies or do you count trout or do you count, you know, I don't know, but, you know, captured carbon. So, Chair Eklund, do you have a comment? And then
I was just going to urge a no vote. I listened to Representative Green. I know he does his homework very carefully, but after having sat on LCCMR, I assume Sarge Sams is the same. So I think we do a pretty good job of making sure these projects are properly vetted. So I urge a no vote, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. Mr. O'Neill, will you call the roll, please?
Yes, Representative Lilly. Representative Lilly,
no.
Representative Lilly, no. Representative Jordan?
No.
Representative Jordan, no. Representative Green?
Yes.
Representative Green, aye. Representative Acom?
No.
Representative Acom, no. Representative Anderson?
Anderson, aye.
Representative Anderson, aye. Representative Bowe?
Bowe votes aye.
Representative Bowe, aye. Representative Christensen? Representative Christensen, no. Representative Hassan, excused. Representative Murphy?
Murphy, aye.
Representative Murphy, aye. Representative Nelson?
Nelson, aye.
Representative Nelson, aye. Representative Erdahl?
All aye.
Representative Erdahl, aye. Representative Wasilewicz?
Wasilewicz, no.
Representative Wasilewicz, no. Representative Zhang?
Film, no.
Representative Zhang, no. Representative Lilly, the ayes are 6, the nays are 6.
Did Representative Murphy vote?
Representative Murphy, I have marked as aye.
Okay. So the vote is 6-6, and it fails on a tie. Representative Eklund, any comments before we lay this the bill over?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. It was a exciting, enhancing debate. I always look forward to engaging with my friend Representative Green, and we are friends. And we just look at things a little bit differently. Mr. Chair, members, the voters spoke on this Lessard Sams back in 2009, I believe it was, and we're doing good projects throughout the state. It's always good to have good debate on things, but I appreciate the support and look forward to the debate going forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Eklund. And with that, the chair lays over House File 3726. I really want to thank the folks that work on this, and I failed to mention Representative Heitzman is also on Lessard Sams, and thank you for his services, you know, with Chair Becker Finn and put this together, and now Chair Eklund's carrying it. But thank you, Mr. Hartwell, for your work and the council. I really do truly believe that you're very earnest, and Mr. Johnson's, and you've listened to some of the concerns that this committee's had, and it seems like that's impacted some of the product that we see this year that you put together, and I want to thank you for that. But I look forward to more discussion, perhaps on the floor, Representative Green.
Absolutely, and but I do want to take the time to thank you. This was very, very responsible of a chair to do this, and I appreciate it very much.
Thank you, Lee Green. And again, Mr. Johnson, I know you're available for questions and your team, and thank you for all your work. With that, committee, thank you for this morning. And with that, we are adjourned.